Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatec.
No, you're working at Inatec because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million...
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had
Hello, Northbank, Saxon Jacks. I'm Tom Out. Andrew on the board. SP futures down 47. Ouch. And NASDAQ futures down 276. So, not a good start to this morning, even though we've been up a lot. Still, that's a little bit of a shocker here this morning. Do we have Mr. Kevin?
Yes, I too am a shocker. So,
well, there you go. You're a shocker kind of guy. I was watching the All-Star game for. I don't know when the hell the thing was supposed to start, but I probably watched it for an hour and a half, and it made it to, like, the second inning. they have enough preamble to the damn thing?
Preamble. They were taking breaks for stuff in between, yeah. You know, between innings. It was it was a fairly boring game.
Yeah, I didn't make it too far.
Yeah, so, yeah, I kind of dozed off, woke up, saw the end of it. There was no drama at the end.
Well, the stocks that are moving this morning that are bringing us down a little bit here are stocks that have been way up. Apple's down 5.22 pre-market. That's 2.2%. NVIDIA's down 5. It's almost 4%. This is pre-market, of course. We don't exactly know, do we, on that stuff, Kevin? A lot of stuff. I watched small as I can get about the convention last night, but... there's no violence or none of that crazy stuff going on. It doesn't appear up there, so that's good.
No, they have some protesters around, but they've been pretty feckless.
Well, you know, we have a lot to protest. You know, it seems to me from every side of the wherever you want to protest this country, I think you can protest. But
I think you're going to see more protests at the Democrats' convention, just because it's going to be about Middle Eastern policy.
I think so. I also think it might be you go more for the guy. If you're pissed off, you're pissed off about the guy in power is more of a target than somebody who might be getting power. I think.
But not with the way you worded it, he's not more of a target.
Well, I don't know. Well, they haven't lost yet. I mean, no.
Target.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh,
focus.
Well, that's a lot of terms you got to toss out now. Even though. We've had how many of those in our lifetime? You know, this is just another one. I thought maybe we were over that. But, you know, the more I think about it, Kevin, I was talking to one of my law buddies last night, and we're trying to... and this guy, he's older than me, been around forever. I mean, he's worked on so many amazing cases. It's just terrific to listen to the guy. I said, how many people do you think, you know, compared to, like, when we were growing up? Of course, he didn't know everybody. He just knew the people in your neighborhood. I mean, it wasn't like we got out much. Said, how many people just at age 20 just sat in a house all day, never did anything, no friends, no, at least in those days you had to go to the library to find hate stuff to read. Now it comes right to you. Just sitting there and you got parents that don't realize the kid's a bleep up and they got 20 guns at his disposal. I said, how many people are like this that should just sit around and hate all day at age 20 and 22? I mean, I find amazing similarities between this kid and the kid in Highland Park. I mean, one was political, and one I don't know what the other guy was shooting at. But I mean, these kids look like they're from Mars. They don't look right. They don't act right. They never had any friends. They don't have any sports. How many people are we talking about like this? I mean, and their parents don't seem to get it. They've got all kinds of guns. Oh yeah, there they are. If you had a kid like that, wouldn't you lock the damn things up at least? I mean,
yeah. Although I will say, yes, I mean, they should be locked up no matter, you know, who your kids are, how old they are, or any of that. You'd keep your guns locked up. That would be, you know, that would be the responsible thing to do. So no argument on that count. I do think in you know, at least everything I keep reading is there were no indicators on this guy.
Other than being a social outcast.
And yet when you look at this, you know, if we assume he acted alone, which I'm still, I still have a little bit of skepticism because there was so much that went into this, it would be pretty hard to believe he did it alone, but he could have. So let's run with the assumption, if he acted alone, there had to be indicators. You know, how could you all of a sudden, you know, in a matter of a few weeks, go from no indicator to I'm shooting the president, I'm making bombs, and I have a bomb in my car?
Well, I don't know. I'm to be perfectly blunt, I'm not lobbing this out there because I know the answers. I'm searching for them. You must know. I would have a real problem if I had one kid. We come from a different generation, Kevin. If you had one kid that just never went out, he was in his room all the time. I mean, sometimes I dashed off to my room and turned the game on because I wanted to watch the Cubs. I mean, I came out, and Mom would say, "Who won?" I wasn't listening at looking at some, you know, deep dark hate something on the internet. Plus, it doesn't seem to mean this guy, assuming he acted alone, which, you know, you're right, it's not. He's, why did he pick Trump? Why did the other guy pick the parade in the Highland Park? I mean, how do they even pick the people they pick? Did you just want to make a name for themselves or what? I mean, I don't know. If you saw somebody that reserved, I mean, maybe we'll get our buddy Dr. Blade on one of these days. You see somebody that reserved, and that's a problem. I mean, maybe COVID made it work because everybody did that, but I mean, I don't know of anybody that we didn't participate. If everybody was playing ball, they didn't pile in, even if you didn't necessarily want them to or something. I mean, do you know anybody who just hung in her parents' basement till they were age 20 and didn't have a job? Don't these people work? This kid didn't have a job, did he?
I used to say this when my own kids were young, and you know, for the, just to give backdrop, I raised my son was a total metalhead drummer.
But he was doing something.
But let me finish the story. So if you get to the high school years, where does the band set up? Well, the band sets up at the drummer's house because it's pretty hard to take that kid. You know, the guitarist, they can just put it in the case and leave. But the drummer, you don't break down the kit. So they're at my house, and so I had all these kids at my house all the time, and you know, many of them were just a lot of people would look at them and go, what a frightening lot. But what I used to say is, first of all, you know, one thing I learned a lot about them is it doesn't really matter in the slightest what a kid looks like. They can...
God. Remember our group?
They can be very engaging. But the part two was the only ones that really scared me were the ones who weren't interested in much of anything.
Yeah.
The ones that had interests, that had things they liked to do, I don't care what you look like, they were occupied. They were focused on, you know, they had some level of productive focus in their lives, and that's a lot of kids. But there always have been some that don't, and those are the ones you wind up reading about them at some awful time.
Well, I know this is probably not the parenting anybody really wants to do these days, but last winter, so I'm telling a snow story. Audrey's got. We only have a couple of snows last winter. You guys had more because you had some lake effect stuck, but we had hardly any. She gets, you know, a few inches, and it was that heavy stuff, and of course her snowblower doesn't work. And so this guy shows up, this Hispanic guy, and he goes, "Hey, would you like us to shovel a driveway and a sidewalk and stuff for like $20? And she goes, "Sure." The guy gets out of the car with his wife and his kid, and they start, you know, they're talking and they're shoveling and they're talking and they're shoveling. So finally, Audrey, of course, likes to know everybody, which is perfect. She's got a great personality, so she starts BSing with the guy. It turns out the guy has owned his own construction company for like forever, just sold it. He has like 8 houses that he rents out and maintains. The guy's got a lot of dough. And she says, what are you doing out here shoveling? He goes, "Kids got nothing to do at home. Wife and I, our house is clean. We got nothing to do. We went out. Let's see if we can do a little work. Have some conversation while we're working and make a few bucks for the kid." He goes, "He's not sitting home doing nothing, not in my house."
Yeah, perfect.
And I'm going, I'm not so sure everybody wants to be out shoveling snow with their kids, but the motivation was was clearly the right thing. He goes, I know what he's doing. He's making a few bucks. We're talking to him, and blah, blah, blah. He goes, that's,
oh, that's really, you know, that's one of the things is we don't have as much opportunity to have captive audience with our kids. Now, it used to, but, you know, pre-cell phone, pre, you know, all the social media stuff, all the web, you know, web 2.0 stuff, and all of that. You get them in the car, you had undivided attention. So as you were driving places, you could talk. There's more distractions now, more places for them to kind of burrow in, and it's a little bit harder to do. And that is one of the cool things about what you just described is we're working. You can't be looking at your phone and shoveling snow, so we can talk. We can, you know, and because that's it's so important to just talk through situations, to talk through what, you know, what's going on. You don't have to say, hey, what, you know, how's school going? Fine.
Yeah.
You know, all of that. You're really trying to engage. And in the process, you can very intentionally impart some little pearls of wisdom, which when things go really well, you know, I'd hear the kids like in the next room and hear my son or my daughter say something that that I've been harping on all along, and say it to their friends, and I go, yes, you know, I'm ready to scream out, yes, he's listening.
God, well, I mean, you know, you wonder, and obviously, the I'm never going to be an advocate of you know, confiscating guns or anything like that, but I see how many there are around, and I'm thinking, boy, that's kind of a lot. But right now, how you can tell the next person he can't have one when there's like 90 zillion of them out there? I don't see how you do that, but. I just, you know, it is funny that I asked Carl, of course. You know, Carl was willing to defend us. I said, Carl, if you had a list of all the people that had 20 guns and weren't really collectors, that actually got them because they thought they might, like, need them or use them someday, and you had a list of all the people who were, you say, were most capable of doing that, would anybody be on both lists? He's like, what do you mean? I said, I'm not talking about the collectors. I said, if I had the time and I had a place that was big enough, I would probably, if, you know, I bet I'd meet a lot of good people at gun shows. I'd love to be a collector of like old Colts or something, you know, have learn how to put, you know, put them together, take them to the gun. It's a great hobby. I don't have a problem with that, and I'd love to probably go out and back and shoot them, even though I'm not a shooter kind of guy. But the idea of having this huge arsenal because somebody's gonna come up your driveway, I just wonder.
I don't think that's why people, most people accumulate art. Arsenals.
I hope not.
What you have is people who do a lot of sports shooting, do hunting, maybe go to the range a lot, and so on. And you know, forgetting the fact that guns scare people, and just set that aside for a minute, and consider that you know, how many people who play guitars have large collections of guitars because they get out, they see a guitar and say, oh, I'd love to play that one. So they you know, they'll buy it. And they'll pick up a different one for different, you know, if they perform, they'll pick up a different one for different performances. If they just like to play, they'll pick up a different one depending on the mood. Or me with a softball bat, you know, when in my softball playing days, every time I went into a sporting goods store, I would spend a half hour at the bat rack, you know, trying out bats.
Well, how could you not? I always did too. And I'm thinking, there's got to be a hit in this one.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a mindset to this that if you're part of the culture and there are a lot of people who, you know, who are at the range at least once a week or they get out, they do skeet, they do hunting, all of that, they're going to have multiple guns.
Well, I would agree.
They're not trying to build an arsenal to blow people away.
I know
it's part of their sporting goods collection.
I know two people that had an AR-15. One of whom used to share an office with me, like recently, young lady. The other one was Audrey's cousin, who unfortunately is deceased, a great guy. And both, I said, what do you need that for? You never know. Somebody's liable to come up my driveway and try and take my guns away or something like that. I hope they don't really mean that. But anyway, but the thing of it is, Kevin, is that I think the background checks are useless. I mean, you hear stories about, you know, what was the guy a couple of years ago that was booted out of the army for spousal abuse or something. And of course the army records never interfaced with the the police force, so the guy got a gun and shot somebody or something. I mean, I don't think people are serious about these background checks.
Yeah, thank God we created the Department of Homeland Security so that all the enforcement agencies could coordinate amongst themselves.
Well, I mean, what did Carl say yesterday? He goes, because I tried to apologize yesterday. I hope I did. I mean, everybody is an expert on everything. I mean, just like every Monday, everybody knows every play the quarterback should have called or the offense coordinator. Everybody's got this shooting all figured out. And to be perfectly blunt, I kind of know we don't, you know. So I was asking Carl, because I think he knows more than most of us, what exactly is the procedure? What is the Secret Service responsible for? How many people are they required to give somebody? Because this is kind of an odd thing here, where you have a former president who gets some protection, who knows how much, and I mean, I don't even know the protocol on that. I mean, if obviously for Jimmy Carter right now, who's in hospice, it's probably a car sitting out in front of his house, if that. I don't know, he might not even need that or want it. Down to the point, now you've got somebody who's running for office. So he's going to be on the move all the time. I mean, I'm not saying anything bad about him. I mean, that's what you do when you run for office, right? Now, does he get to have, you know, one of these events a week, three a day? I mean, who decides where's the budget? Now, it seems like, from what I've been able to figure out, and I can't figure out the yardages on this stuff, it seems like outside the venue, the grounds are local law enforcement. And Carl says, especially because of the everybody's got this encrypted communication now, because there's no way on earth that the Secret Service is on the same frequency as the local people. So you have to have two people sitting down someplace, one on one and one on the other. There's a problem, you know, you got to do it the old-fashioned way. You got to tell the other guy, and he's got to tell his people. But I don't know who pays the overtime, who determines how many of the local people you need in a certain venue, who pays them. What if Secret Service, if it is their job, say the venue, the outside area needs 50 people, and they go, well, that's cool, we only got 25. Does that mean you go ahead or you don't have the event, or does that mean you pay the state guys to come up double time, and who pays? I mean, there's an amazing amount of this that I wish I knew, Kevin, before I criticize. And then I'll criticize. But I mean, I don't know who does. I mean, what it mean? And Carl said, actually, one of the other guys said yesterday morning that RFK Jr. just got. Biden said he could have Secret Service protection yesterday morning, right, or something. Was it yesterday morning?
Yeah, just within the last day or two.
So I asked Carl. I go, hey, well, okay. So what if he goes, thanks, I'm going to have a big rally. I mean, if people show up.
Well, he's not going to have a big rally.
No, but if he did,
big rally would require a lot of people to go.
Okay, but without disparaging the man, if he were to say, I'm going to go have a big rally in Lane Tech Stadium or someplace, which has, you know, a bunch of buildings around it, or Gately Stadium.
Is that still there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Gately, everybody still plays there.
I played at Gately. I played at Lane.
Well, they had actually put the artificial turf in Gately before that. It was a mud bit.
I remember when they put that in.
Oh,
the
God.
First time. I remember when they put it in the first time.
Anyway,
I had to worry about rug burns, but I digress.
Then what? They go, hey, we just gave you two guys. Now we got 10. We don't have 10. And now does the Chicago police or the county or everybody else got to hop to it and give him 50 guys a staff? You know, you're right.
Oh, first of all, I think the contract of the local police is with the Secret Service. I've actually heard Secret Service people speak, not so much about this incident. I just haven't tuned any of them in. As in the past about how this works, and they do rely on support from the local police, but it's under contract with the Secret Service. So I think that just comes out of their budget.
Well, how long in advance do you need to do that?
Well, and they do need advance. In fact, they always send advance teams. To size up the place several days earlier so that they can have a good plan in place.
I have not heard, and maybe you know, John Flanning was going, is the place the kid shot from outside the metal detector perimeter or inside?
Outside, I think.
Outside, okay.
Outside, I think. But that's not necessarily the, considered the... protection perimeter.
Yeah, I'm saying you would think the metal detector perimeter would be further out where somebody can shoot. But the part about the building was the one that the police were doing their staging in. You know what I thought, Kevin? You remember that movie Hospital? George C.
No.
Scott? Well, it was a spoof on hospitals, right? And George C. Scott was the head of surgery at that hospital. And this guy was in, and all of a sudden people start getting, like, killed in the hospital and stuff. It was a spoof. People were dying, right? So they got this old guy.
Those wacky mass murderers.
Well, I don't know if he was killing people or what he was doing, but he's in there, and they're trying to find, they can't find anybody. So George C. Scott finds out all about it, and he goes, he says, how did he get out of the room without anybody noticing? And guess what the answer was?
What was it?
He put the call nurse sign on, knowing nobody would show up. So it's like, so as soon as I heard about the guy was on the roof of the staging area, I'm sitting there going, God, he must have watched the movie. If he wanted to not be disturbed, put the call nurse sign on. You know,
things I've learned this week is that they had people in the building.
Yeah.
But not on the building. And they did have plenty of advance warning to do something about it, even if it was to tell Trump not to go out there yet.
That's what I would have thought. It wouldn't seem enough of that.
You know, I mean, this is just a real poop show on this.
It's almost like if
there's no common sense involved.
Yeah, well, it is almost like a satire, but a deadly one. I mean, it's almost like if you know they're looking for your car, you park it in the police parking lot. They'll never look there. I mean, I'm not trying to be funny here. I'm saying it's almost like, you know, in plain sight, right? I was thinking yesterday that Karen Reeves, I don't know if you were listening, she's running for office for rep, and she, I mean, all, not all, but a lot of her rallies, for lack of a better term, you know, south of I-80, were all at these county fairs and stuff, and they're all the same kind of buildings, right? I mean, I'm glad the guy wasn't killed. I really feel awful for the guy who was. Are the other two guys going to make it or no? Do we know?
Oh, no. I haven't heard an update on that.
Yeah, I haven't either. What do you make of what the market has been doing? I don't know if you don't watch it as close as I do, but all of a sudden we've had this massive rally in the Russell. The idea that, you know, Trump's going to come in, all of a sudden his interest rates are going to be flying down. It's going to be free money again. Boy, Kevin, I don't know if that's going to happen.
I think it would be reasonable to expect less regulation again, the regulation initiative to be rekindled, but whether, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with rates.
By the way, I got a new term. We're going to tweet it out and maybe see if I'm horrible at these terms, but since Flanagan hasn't come up with one and he's our wordsmith, what do you think of the term? I was talking to like attorney buddies last night. What do you think of the term shockflation?
Okay, to explain what it means.
That everybody, you know, you see the general inflation, gasoline and, you know, chicken and all the other stuff, and rent and whatever, and you actually got a little bit of a raise, I think most people probably did, and all of a sudden you've managed to adjust your budget to where you're sort of there. And all of a sudden you get like a roof problem, or God help you, you get a vet bill or an emergency room bill or a tax bill, or your air conditioner goes out and you go, or a transmission. Say what? $5,000? What are you talking about? It's the things that people don't normally buy, that they don't normally price, that every once in a while you have to buy. Then all of a sudden you go, what the bleep?
Well,
it's not regular inflation, because nobody buys a roof every day. You wouldn't even know unless you needed one, right? Or a neighbor.
So we need to go to synonym.com and start pulling up synonyms for shock, for event, for surprise.
Well, the reason why I got that one, remember back when we had like three stations on Saturday night, my mother, who was an absolute freak for horror movies, and my Daffy brother, he's the president of PTI, a great guy, they loved that stuff, and I was never really into it. And what was it, Saturday night at midnight? Was it Shock Theater? So that's what I remember. So I use the term shock inflation. It's the first one I came up with. It's probably not the best, but, you know, it's pretty good for me.
It's a start, Tom. We can work with that.
You're talking about who's doing it? Me. I'm not the wordsmith. You guys. Flanny's supposed to be our wordsmith. SP Futures is down 57. NASDAQ Futures down 318. Wow, we could actually be down today. We've got, like, what's doing that is the I got the Q's down 750 already. Amazon's down 217. Apple down 451. Tesla down 6. Microsoft down 6. Meta down 679. Nvidia down 5. So all the big sevens are getting whomped here this morning. But they've been way up. But still, they're getting whomped this morning. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are or what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Andrew on the board. S&P futures down 58. NASDAQ futures down 320. Now we got the Dow futures down 125. Dow futures aren't down that much. Now yesterday the Dow was up like 700 points. Everything in the Dow was like way up, especially like your United Health was up 30 some bucks, up another three today. I'm shocked and appalled that the all the healthcare places are doing well with the prices they charge. Over in Europe, we got the DAX down 141, 1.8%, FTSE down 24.3%, CAC around down 38.5%. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei down 177.4%, still over 41,000, 41,097. Hang Seng's actually up 11 points, but still 17,739 under 18,000. Shanghai down 13, 2962. Yesterday, like I said, the Dow was up 742, S&P's up 35, NASDAQ up 36. So the Dow is not giving back hardly any of that, but the other guys are. NASDAQ for sure is giving up a lot, like 10 times what they made yesterday so far. Bonds, 10-year up 1 basis point, 4.18. The Bund unchanged. Japan up 1 basis point, 1.03. Oil, which had been sinking, rallying a little bit today, up 36 cents, 81.12. Brent down up 23, 83.96. Natural gas up a penny, 2.20. RBOB unchanged, 2.47. Gold, which has been on a tear, up another 6 bucks, 24.73. Silver rubber is down 26 cents. That's almost a full percent, 31.19. That's the one I'd really like to see run up more, and it's not. But the day is young. Foreign exchange, the dollar is unchanged against the euro, but 109.4. Again, the dollar has been sinking. British pound is over 130. We haven't seen that in a long time. So dollar has been creeping down. Money's coming into the system. That's why gold's going up. That's why the market's going up. Duh. And we've got crypto, which has been rallying. Up to 64.8, but it's actually down 165 this morning, but not much of a move down. Andrew, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
All right, it is 6:34 here in Chicago on Wednesday, July 17th. Not too much in the sports today from our favorite teams. I was going to ask you, Tom, anything to note this Wednesday?
Yeah,
this
the
Wednesday?
Day after the All-Star game is, the other than the day after Super Bowl, is the deadest day in sports.
Yeah, okay, so good to know I wasn't alone in that feeling, but moving on to weather, it is not too bad today. We're currently at 71 degrees. Going to be breezy and a little bit of warm. We might have some clouds and just a little bit of showers throughout the day here in Chicago. But we're going to have a high of 79. Over in Phoenix, they're keeping things warm as usual. They're at 91 degrees. They have sunny skies and a heat warning, which is always fun. And they're going to have a high of 112 today. Over for Chicago traffic, the inbound expressways are building up a little bit, but nothing too major to report. That is except for on the outbound Edens, an overturned vehicle has caused, I believe, the Edens to close. That's going north between Gulf Road and Old Orchard. Traffic is being diverted off onto Old Orchard, and expect delays up to 2 hours if you're heading north on the Edens. That is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Kevin, just because we are some stocks and jacks, I have a question for you. And boy, if you get the answer to this one, I'm going to really think highly of you. The question in Quora was, Who is what major league pitcher was old school? Now, of course, there are probably all kinds of them, but this is sort of an interesting story. I don't think you're going to pop up a... I'll give you a clue. He served 4 years aboard the USS Alabama. Now, what was the USS Alabama?
USS Alabama? I have no idea. What about the USS Alabama?
Well, now it would be a submarine.
Now it's a submarine based on the movie Crimson Tide.
Yes. There actually, I think, is a... The nuclear submarines are all named for states, but back in those days, it was the battleships that were named for states. USS Alabama was a North Dakota-class battleship right before the four that everybody's familiar with, the Iowa class, the Iowa, New Jersey, Missouri. It was right before the same size guns, a little smaller ship, not as fast, although it was considered a fast battleship until the new ones were built that were faster. So there you go. But they had the same 16-inch guns. I think there were the Alabama, the Washington, North Carolina, either three or four in that class. But we got off on a subject. Anyway, the man they're talking about...
Was it Bob Feller then?
Bullet Bob Feller. With his nickname, the Heater from Van Meter. Where the hell's Van Meter?
The Heater from Van Meter. I don't know. You can look that up.
Yeah, you can look that up.
I'd look it up for you, but I'm driving now, so...
He served 4 years aboard the Alabama. Got 4 years on the same ship. First, the Alabama was in escort duty and all other kinds of duty in North Atlantic for quite a while. Then it went through the Panama Canal to the South Pacific, and he was on the ship the whole time. He hadn't pitched
And Tom, when you think about that impact on his career, that he spent 4 years of his Hall of Fame career in the service, imagine what his statistics could have been.
Well, I bet whenever they did put into port, a couple guys had a mitt and played catch with him, at least. I hope. I don't know if I want to play catch with Bob Feller, for God's sake. I better have a pad in my mitt.
Yeah. Yes, I would be fine having a lob catch with Bob Feller to say I did it. But, yeah, one of his other nicknames was Rapid Robert.
He hadn't pitched a game in 1,428 days. So he gets discharged from the Navy on August 22nd, 1945. 2 days later, he pitches a complete game, fanning 12, allowing four hits, beating the Tigers 4-2 at Municipal Stadium in Detroit before a crowd of 46,000 people. No rehab start, no pitch count, no easing into things. Just straight up badassery. And here's the quote. His quote was, Mike says, Van Meter is in Iowa. Thank you, Mike. Here's the quote. It actually was the quote that people from World War II... Heroes don't come home from war. Survivors return from war.
That's a good one. Yeah.
I know. So, my uncles always said, "Boy, the heroes are the guys that didn't come back."
So while we're on sports, there is a Chicago sports story though, and that is that the Bears signed their first round draft picks yesterday.
Well, an hour before camp, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sure it was. Pretty well negotiated before then, but hey, as long as everybody's around, let's announce it when the gaggle is here for rookie report day.
That guy,
so,
I saw.
Yeah, I don't doubt that the deals had been done for a few days at least.
All the I watched him. They had him on TV the other night, just throwing all these passes in camp. Whatever they tell you about the size of that guy, he's not that big, Kevin. He's got the skinniest legs I've ever seen. I mean, I think we got another quarterback. Oh, he better be fast. He looks like he's like the
he
kid
is
from
fast.
He looks like the kid from Seattle. It's now in Denver. What's his name? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, Wilson.
Yeah.
No, he's on Pittsburgh now. He's in Pittsburgh.
I know, but he was Seattle, Denver, now Pittsburgh.
Now Pittsburgh. He's the starter ahead of Justin Fields.
Are you up for one more trivia question? On baseball? Name the one team, there's only one, that has a Hall of Fame player at every position. I would never have guessed the team. I would have, of course, said Yankees.
One team that has a Hall of Fame player at every position. Let's go with the Cardinals.
Probably pretty close. I went with the Yankees, and of course, it turns out it's the Giants. So there. The thorn in the whole thing is there's what, 30 teams? There's only 19 third basemen in the Hall of Fame. So that's the hardest position to get. Kevin, are you with us? Sounds like maybe he's not.
No, I'm back. I'm back. We're on the Southwest Michigan highways and byways. So we lost you for a minute. You said it was the Giants?
Yeah, and evidently the spot that's hardest to get is third base. There's only 19 third basemen, and there's 30 teams. So that would be
a fun exercise to name the 19 third baseman, but I don't think I could do that.
We tried last night. I did about I got about 8. I mean, the obvious ones are Brooks Robinson, Mike Schmidt, Chipper Jones, Ron Santo. Those guys are lately. But past that, I'm sure there's guys that if I thought about it a little bit more. Wasn't Harmon Killebrew a third baseman?
Yeah, hard to say third base for sure because he played a lot of first base in the latter part of his career.
Yeah, I mean, it's
you have that. You have Mike Schmidt. You have I'm just trying to think back to olden days. Is Ken Boyer on the list? I don't know.
Probably. Not one person had 100% vote from the regular committee, the baseball writers. There's a lot of guys that have 100% in the veterans. Not one person is 100%, and not even like Babe Ruth, for God's sake. He was like,
I know.
And Willie Mays. What does somebody just have to be an ass and vote no to if it's Jesus Christ? I mean, what the hell?
Oh yeah, you see some of the guys who've gotten in lately. You know, a Tony Gwynn, for example. Is there a doubt? But it's apparently in somebody's mind there is.
Or they're getting in too early, or the big thing, and they shouldn't be getting in after 4 votes. They should be getting in after 5, and you know, I mean, all this crazy stuff, and you kind of wonder. But there's always somebody, and there's a lot of guys that are right on the 75 line, which is even kind of crazier, I think. But and there's a lot of people like Lee Smith didn't make the Hall of Fame at all under the baseball writers. He was 100% in the veterans committee. I mean, you would think that
I thought Lee Smith got voted in through the normal process.
I'm going to dig this up here before I make an idiot of myself and some. I think he might have been veterans, but then there's all kinds of people. Well, for a while, the Veterans Committee didn't hold a vote. They just were in, right? And then I think now there's like the old Veterans Committee, and then there's the new Veterans Committee now, depending on what age you're talking about. And then there's the...
It could be. I mean, basically, you have a Veterans Committee, and that's their way of saying you young sports writers don't know crap.
Well, they don't.
About the history of the sport.
And then you've got the there's a name for it. I'll find it. What's the group that lets the people in from the old Negro Leagues? I'll find it here in a second. There's a special committee for that, which there ought to be because those guys research that. You know, those guys that are in there from that particular group. So there's a bunch of different ways to get in. I think that they've been trying to get people in there that belong in there. I mean, I've been trying to do some research regarding the people from the Negro Leagues and the statistics. And just about everybody, the people who did make it over from the leagues and actually did play Major League Baseball, I mean, the statistics did go down. They still have been, you know, amazingly great players, but the, it's not the, obviously Josh Gibson played against a lot of people that probably would not have played in the major league, but that doesn't mean he wasn't a great ball player. He sure as hell was, right? So, I mean, people go crazy on these statistics, but the simple fact is these people are all great players. And somebody I was reading, Kevin, at the, one guy said that the people at the top edge of the, and like your Babe Ruth and people like that, they said they would be stars today because they were just the top of the gene pool. I mean, and when you're top of the gene pool, you know, you're top of the gene pool. It's like saying Oscar Robertson couldn't play today or Wilt. Then they figured
and they would have had access to all of the advanced training,
yeah,
equipment, methodologies, everything that we know. that they didn't know back then. So, yeah, of course they would have been great.
And but then they the same people claim that your everyday player back from the 20s probably would be a marginal player today, or maybe even AAA, and that your guy at the end of the bench back then would probably be AA, which probably makes sense, I would think. I mean, it's hard to prove, but that's their.
I'm not sure about that because there were so few teams.
Well, that's the thing.
The guy at the end of the bench now that you've expanded the pool of end of the bench spots. You know, I don't know that that's.
Well, how do you? Well, forget about baseball for a second. How do you apply that to hockey? Because I mean, hockey used to have six teams. Now, if you look at every player now, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if you're that good, I guess it doesn't matter. But my couple of my attorney buddies have grandkids that live up north side, and their dads played hockey. So these kids are learning hockey at age two or three. I mean, like the kids did in Canada back in those days, but. They're 12. They've already been out of the country like five times playing on these travel teams, and they're playing. They're in camps this week somewhere. I mean, I think if you were to took the average person now, he's probably bigger, faster, well, you know, better fed, stronger. When you had six teams, how many rookies got in a year? Like three or something. And how many people? How good did you have to be? There's the VC. That's the Veterans Committee. There's the Baseball Writers Association. And there's the groups, the Today's Game Era Committee, they're the TG, the Expansion Era Committee, the Golden Era Committee, the Pre-Integration Committee, the Special Committee on the Negro Leagues and the Pre-Negro Leagues. There's a Veterans Committee based on Negro League careers. So these are all the different ways you get in there. And there's Early Baseball Committee and blah, blah, blah. And that's something, eh? But the first people in, I bet everybody could name the first five, with Ty Cobb, Walter Johnson, Christy Mathewson, Babe Ruth, and Honus Wagner. The only one who got 98% was Ty Cobb. Ruth got like 95%. Christy Mathewson only got 90% of the votes. How the hell can that be? Roberto Clemente didn't get 100. Nobody did. And I'll dig down to Lee Smith, but I'm just looking at this going, God, people could just be such assholes. When would Roberto Clemente win? When, like 70
something? Well, you know, there was a time when they took, I don't think this would apply to Christy Mathewson, but to some of the others it might, there has always been this kind of morals, you know, representing the game and so on. So you could see people holding that against Cobb. You could see people holding that against Ruth. I don't think that was the reputation of Christy Mathewson, though.
Bob Gibson, 84%. Come on, it could be the best.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Al Kaline, 88. Willie Mays, 94. Who could be better than Willie Mays, for God's sake? Frank Robinson. I think Frank Robinson was the best ball players I ever saw, 89. Hank Aaron, 97. Juan Marichal. Don Drysdale, 78. That's a squeaker. I mean, these numbers. Ferguson Jenkins, 75. Okay. When did what's his name go in? Willie McCovey, 81. Willie McCovey was a great ball player. It's interesting to go back and look at some of this stuff. What do you think? We haven't talked because obviously the crazy thing that happened Saturday. Where does this put the Democrats? Are they going to go with this guy, or what are they going to do? There's enough people within their own party to want to dump him that you wonder how he's got to be somewhat wounded. And that's a bad term. But, I mean, they're losing time to have an open kind of primary if they want to replace him, aren't they?
Well, they are, and the DNC, as engineered by the Biden camp, is trying to do a virtual voice vote as soon as possible. To secure the nomination for him and ahead of the convention, so that they can just cruise into the convention and have just make it a all speeches convention. I don't know, you know, there's some pushback of that, but in the end, if Biden doesn't want to go, there's not much they can do about it at this point.
Well, the only thing you could do, and I don't see it happening, is that is the cabinet coming together right now and saying he's incapable. And I'm gonna guess, without knowing, again, this is Lobbin went out there, I'm going to guess that if you actually went down in the office where it's just you and him and sat and talked with the guy, he'd be pretty coherent. But he's past the stage of being up, you know, in front of a crowd lobbing questions at him. I mean, that's sort of where I think he is. I don't know if that's true or not. But
I tend to think he's kind of in and out. So sometimes he is very coherent, and other times he's not very coherent.
Well, I hope that's not the case, but you're probably right. There's kind of no precedent. In the last 10 years, would you say that just about everything we talk about, there's sort of no precedent for?
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Well, and some of it is the lack of fealty to our Constitution. So you could claim a lot of precedent, but you know Congress giving up their just sort of ceding their power to the executive branch and let us get ruled by executive orders. I think that Supreme Court's what was the name of the decision? I'm blanking on the name because I too am in and out sometimes. The decision that said that sort of clipped the wings of the administrative state. I think those are the kinds of things that need to happen, because as we get back to a little more the way this was intended to run, I think that puts us in better stead for not having to deal with all this unprecedented crap.
Well, the executive order, where's Lou when I need him, but I'm not a constitutional scholar. I've never once admitted myself, but I did read something once that said from somebody, some guy, I think it was a guy, might have been a lady, that said actually the weakest part of the Constitution is the federal branch. The executive branch, sorry, and that everybody in the room knew that the first president was going to be George Washington, and they thought everybody was going to be George Washington, and they're not. They don't have the same morals.
Well, that's true, Tom. There's a lot of documentation of the underlying conversations of that and what they intended and what concerned them in the future. They were pretty future focused. As they crafted it, and as they crafted the Bill of Rights to tack onto it right away, because they were afraid of what could happen down the road. I can see that, but you know the whole part of that of the Constitution that gets ignored is, you know, if it's not enumerated here, it falls to the states.
Well,
and I know, you know, there's the whole the Commerce Clause, and there's, you know, that part of it, it means you can't have everything go to the states, and I get that, but there is a whole lot of stuff that should be left completely alone by the federal government, and it's not.
But see, I have a real pushback on that. When I say pushback, it's not that I disagree with you. What you're saying is, I think there's a few parts of the Constitution that we need to do all over again. But when you do that, you never know where things are going to land, so you got to be careful when you do that.
Don't do it over. You do an amendment.
You
do an amendment, because if we were to convene a constitutional convention, I would be scared to death about what the politicians would come up with.
I would be too, but there's a couple things that are actually, I think, are a big problem when it, the idea between the states and the federal government. And one is, in those days, and you can't tell me that these guys were able to anticipate this, because I don't think anybody could have back then. They nothing in their mind would lead them to think that somebody in New Hampshire could influence the vote in Carolina for like state rep or something. How the hell did he even get there? I was reading some story about how when Jefferson was in Virginia, to get from Virginia, where was the capital at the time, like Philadelphia or New York or something? It wasn't Washington, right? It was, and when did they move to Washington? Whatever. It took them like 3 weeks to get there or something. You know, and it wasn't that far today. Somehow or another, this idea that, you fly over, I get this hit my feeble brain, Kevin, one day when I was in New York, actually at a World Series game the night before, for in a skybox with all these people. But actually, it wasn't a skybox, it was a box. The next day I had to be in San Francisco. So I took a plane from Newark to San Francisco, and in 6 hours, you're looking out the left and you're seeing all these states. You look out the right and you go, okay, let's see, right down there, you know, possession of marijuana is okay, but over there, it's life imprisonment, and over there, it's 10 years, and you're sitting there going, this is crazy when you're looking out at all these places. I mean, I'm not saying we shouldn't have any states, but somehow or another, I think that there needs to be some sort of redo in campaign financing and other stuff, for now everybody gets to influence everybody else everywhere, and I don't think they thought of that. I don't see how they could have. The other thing is, if you and I were scoundrels, the people in that room, half of them were scoundrels, right? I mean, scoundrels have always been the same way. So you and I both think, I think the Constitution was designed by people who knew people's instincts, right? That's why you have the check and balance system. Because if you didn't have it, somebody would always try and take charge, right? I mean, it's just the way people are. So they did the best job they could, but then came this, but you and I, as big a scoundrel as we were, how long did we live in those days? 50? 55? We'd have to be real scoundrels to try and co-opt 435 people. Now, there's this thing called a corporation, which never dies. And they can co-opt 435 people if they're big enough. And the bigger they get, the more they can co-opt. I don't think the current laws sort of address that, Kevin, or even anticipate that. That somehow Pfizer, we listened the other day, the COVID drug, one of my friends is on it for a week, $1,250 out of Pfizer.
Oh, that's the Paxlovid?
So I didn't ask the name. But.
Yeah. Well, you know, what I really love about that one, too, is they say must be taken like within 4 or 5 days of having symptoms. Almost everybody who gets it is over it in 4 or 5 days.
Yeah.
But come buy our, come get our $1,200 drug. Sure thing.
Hey, I got one more quick question on the Call of Fame. This is a trick question. Perfect for you. There might actually be one person who you could say had 100% vote. Can't really say it, but you maybe could say it. What would that person be?
One person who had 100% vote.
You could say there was 100% vote.
I don't know. The closest one I could think of would be Clemente.
Very similar to that.
The circumstances of his death.
Very similar to that. So I'm giving you a huge clue.
Okay, so who you got?
Lou Gehrig.
I know you are, but I'm missing it.
Lou Gehrig.
Oh, okay.
It was a voice of Clem. As soon as he died, they put him in. Sort of like Clemente, but I don't know why they actually voted on Clemente, and somebody voted against him, which is even more bizarre.
He died so they didn't make him wait 5 years.
Yeah.
They decided not to make him wait 5 years.
But they actually had a vote for Clemente, and it wasn't 100%. But Gehrig, unless somebody yelled out no in the middle of the yeses, it's going to go down as 100%. So there. But I mean,
you could hear that one voice when they do it. When they do it by acclamation, there's one guy going,
but I, you know, the thing that is, a lot of stuff is concerning about, the laws, and you guys know more about them than me.
My girlfriend be for Lou Gehrig.
Yeah. Real quick, Kevin, we got a dash. We get Russell, but I'm stunned between the constant bickering back and forth here between the Supreme Court and the Biden administration regarding these student loans. And I see all kinds of weaknesses in that system that needs to be, quote, fixed. And I think you agree with me on a lot of them. But I have no idea how the Congress is watching this for 4 years and not saying, hey, that's our job, and do something. I mean, what do you have to do? Goose them in the behind? I mean, if it's obvious to everybody on this show, how is it obvious to them? What else are they doing all day?
Well, you have to remember, first of all, Congress is dysfunctional, so that's always going to be a factor in there. But to the extent that the Democrats have had the say-so, that requires them to admit that their bill during the Obama administration that created this, extreme, it was a mess in the first place, and that just made it worse, then they have to go and repeal that and make sure that they're, in the process, they're admitting that what they did sucked. And I'm sorry, we do not do anything that goes against St. Barack.
Well, I know that a lot of people of your political persuasion have these, but Kevin, the issues are interest, And the simple issues to me, interest has been too damn high, considering everybody else. The big shots have been 2% or 1%, and these people were paying 6 or 7, a lot of them. Well, that's too friggin' high. You're scalping your own kids, for God's sake. And the other is, there needs to be some repeal of the thou shalt not bankrupt when you've got people that are 80 years old in a nursing home that co-sign for somebody still on the hook for it, for God's sake. I mean, you could at least fix those two things, couldn't you? Those aren't because of Obama.
Well, you would the Obama legislation specifically took away the option to bankrupt on it.
Well, that was because everybody reacted to the Jewish guys who went to med school and then declared bankruptcy.
Well, still they did it. So yeah, so gee, Congress overreacted to something hard to believe.
But I mean, I don't when I see something bad happening, I don't necessarily say, oh God, it was the dirty Bush's bill. I mean, the bills have go through all these people. Everybody, the fact is, it's screwed up.
No. It's not saying it was that dirty, guys. It's saying shit that was that was our bill, and you know, how are we going to weasel out of this without having to admit fault?
I think in every one of these bills, it's 90 bazillion pages. There's stuff that needs to be fixed. I don't care whose it is. I mean, that would be me.
I know, but you have a mindset. That you know, it's sort of like the Fonz in Unhappy Days, trying to say I was wrong.
Well, I tell you what, if I see a crummy position,
clips are that there too. Send Matt after that clip, Fonzie going I was wrong.
I tell you what, in my business, the last thing I care about, if I see a position that looks lousy, I just want to fix it. I don't really care what I thought of the day that I put it on. Fact is, it needs to be fixed. Stuff happens. I mean, duh. I mean, you're right. A lot of people are thinking it's probably the exact way you're thinking. But the fact is, whoever, I don't care what kind of artist you are, something needs to be fixed. Fix it. That's just me. See what happens when you're in the middle of the two parties, Kevin? You think a lot differently. You're not worried about... I don't even remember or care who put the thing through. I just want it fixed. Just saying.
Well, way to be practical.
Yeah, well, where's that getting me?
Nowhere.
God.
Get you nowhere, but you get there fast.
You get there fast. We don't know where we're going, but we're well on our way. I love that. Kevin, take care of yourself. SP Futures down 53. NASDAQ Futures down 306. We'll be right back with Professor Russell Rhodes.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
There's something happening here. What it is.
Hello, welcome back, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Andrew on the board. SP Futures down 54, NASDAQ Futures down 310. It's actually up a little bit from when we came in. The reason why this is happening is all the our big stocks here, the big eight, are all down, although NVIDIA was down 5. But now, look at the way this thing trades before market. Down 505, 502. Then it'll flip to 286. The market, these markets must be so wide here. Professor, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Doing all right. Are these markets before the opening is bad as they show here? Or are they just? I'm just getting the reports slow.
I think they're, you know, the spreads are fairly wide. And when you've got stocks that are moving in both directions in leaps and bounds each day, you probably don't have a whole lot of people that want to do very much before the open. So I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if, you know, there's some of that contributing to what's going on.
It is
looking at them down so much because you see that we always talk about how do you figure out when it's the beginning of the end before we have a big downturn, and you never really can figure out where that timing came from. Heck, if we could, we'd be doing the show from the Bahamas or something.
Well, yeah, it's
so you start to feel the extra skittishness, and I think that definitely shows up more in the pre-market because of the illiquidity relative to the regular market hours.
I'm actually looking at this book. It surfaced on my desk here. The Year of the Great Crash, like 1929. What you just said has always been an object of, for sure, some trepidation because of the crash of '87. Where if it had happened the day before, I'd be wealthy beyond dreams of whatever. Instead of when it did happen, because one was a day after expiration, and one was a day before, or one was a day of expiration. But even 29, when there was a trial run, when I say a trial run, there was a big, I don't know if you know this or not, but I think it was in April or May, the market had a big drop in 1929, and everybody was totally panicked, and what's his name, J.P. Morgan himself, evidently, still had a badge on the New York Stock Exchange, and he walked down and went up to some post and started buying stock, and everybody dove out of the sides of the place and started buying, and he turned the market back himself. I forget that. I'll look it up because I'm just otherwise think guys would think I'm BSing, but I'm not. Then all
no,
of a sudden,
no, you're not. You're definitely. I love market history stuff. You're absolutely correct.
The only thing is,
I wonder. Do you think J.P. Morgan really needed a badge? Don't you think he could have just walked down there and done whatever the hell he wanted to?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you're a huge shack. Can you just walk out on the shore and start trading like in Trading Places?
Oh goodness gracious, no, not at all.
Yeah, he probably. Well, I'm saying it is the owner of the bank. They probably let him trade for the bank. You think he probably didn't need a badge, but then the thing happened in October. Now the question is, and what you just brought up, and it's why didn't it happen a week before or a week after? What was so specific about that day? I mean, right? I mean, how do you?
Yeah, and it's a. I got this question Monday night in my derivatives/risk management class. How can you pick up on that excess volatility? And, you know, ahead of time, and I'm like, if I could, guys, I'd probably be, teaching this class from my island. That's just one of the key things. And unfortunately, that's why you got to be around and be protected all the time, because when you think it's the beginning of the end, is that right? Yeah, the beginning of the end. And you don't have enough protection on, you're jumping in there and trying to buy, S&P puts hand over fist or whatever to hit. Because you think now's the time to hedge yourself, that's just one of those things that you just can't figure out the timing on.
Well, the phenomenon, Russell, you've been around probably more institutional people than I have, but at the retail side of the world, the it seems like 2007, that's why PTI was Money Manager of the Year in 2007. Mm-hmm. Now, you might ask yourself, how the hell did you become Money Manager of the Year? We were doing a Protect Index program, and in those days, it was easier to have a track record because there was only one ETF, was the S&P, the Spider.
Yeah.
And after a while, he had two, the Qs. So my brother Dan, who's very good at this, we were actually able to get a track record that passed muster at the NASD. Because we had all kinds of clients in those two positions, but those were the only two positions we had. We didn't have to worry about the XLE, and now we have, people in, 20 different indexes. So it's virtually impossible to come up with a track record over everything you do because you do something different for every person. But we actually, had one, and the reason why we did so well in 2007 was when people say volatility right now, most people means the market's going down. Well, that's not what volatility means.
No,
Russell knows more than I do about that. But the point is, in 2007, when the market made its absolute high, the VIX would have been down to like 10. the puts were so cheap that the money we put in that we were protecting, I said to Dan, hey, you know what? These puts are so cheap. Instead of buying, I mean, we probably had, whenever we did a roll, we probably did 500 of them. You know, we had all kinds of people mm-hmm. in the program. I said, you know what? Instead of doing 500, do like 750. They're so cheap. And, you know, and let's not sell the calls because they're too cheap to sell. The protected program, we buy protected puts and we sell covered calls to try and pay for the puts. And mm-hmm. he goes, okay, it sounds a little weird, but you're right, it is so cheap. And I mean, I don't want to sell the calls here. So when the thing goes flying down, we had extra puts. So we actually made money on the way down, which you're not supposed to. I mean, we were supposed to be a little long. Ooh. But as the thing flew down, those puts became 100 delta pretty quick, and all of a sudden we were actually short. So that's how we became, you know, money manager of the year. I wasn't saying it was an accident. It was just, but then when the market hit the bottom, the puts are expensive as hell. So it's almost like it's a totally different mindset than if you go out and buy a midlife crisis car. You go buy a Corvette. Your insurance your insurance is going to be, you know, probably $8,000 a year or something for the damn thing. I chain it to the curb. But 10 years from now, when it's worth, instead of $80,000, it's worth $8,000. Your insurance is going to be a lot less, right? But in this world, people are very comfortable with Apple at like $240 or something or $235. They have not a care in the world. But if, and this is not a prediction, if Apple were to drop to like $150, all of a sudden everybody's going to panic and insure it. And my thought would be, you should have insured it at $230. Don't worry so much at $150. But again, that's me being a trader, different than being mm-hmm. a retail investor. But it is people. I mean, I ask you, what's the mentality between the VIX being higher when the market's down than when it's up? It should be just the opposite, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you would think that, it's all counterintuitive when you talk about it logically, but, we're using fun quotes. I love the Fonz quote. I doubt you could find that one on YouTube. But I always like the Mike Tyson one when you're talking about, everybody has a plan until you get punched in the face.
Yeah.
You know, you got, you've got a pretty decent plan. If the market starts to sell off, maybe you'll buy some protection. You wake up in the morning and the S&Ps are down 50 points, which really isn't as much as it used to be in percent terms. But, and all of a sudden there's a little bit, and I'll use the Eddie Murphy from Trading Places, which I think was probably Eddie Murphy probably should be considered one of the fathers of behavioral finance when he said they're panicking. I can tell. I can feel them. They can't. Oh, yeah. They're not going to get the G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu grip. That's right. Eddie Murphy, Billy Ray Valentine is the father of behavioral finance.
Without a doubt.
I got to write that down because that was too good.
Hey, what do you think of speaking of which, before I forget.
But that's why the insurance is more expensive. When it's probably the worst time to try and buy it.
The timing of it, obviously, I deal with retail people all the time. Those are my clients, and I love them. But there's a little kind of too much TV watching going on, and that mm-hmm. don't worry if the market turns, and I've been lucky enough to be long this whole way, and not only just long, but long the right stocks, that, you know, Cramer will tell me when to get out, or I'll sense the top, or they'll tell me where the top is, and you know what?
Yeah.
And for any firm, not just PTI or PTI Pro Direct, which I think a lot of people are signing up for now. Everybody thinks when we started in business in 1991, Russell, you could have walked in at 12:00, and we would have had you in an account take your check at 1:00.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would have put the ACATS form in, and we'd have had your stuff, in 3-4 days. Well, you know what? That's not the way the world works anymore. We have to vet you through Interpol. Everybody you try and get your money, you transfer your stuff over, the firms are now rejecting it and making it very difficult to do that, and FINRA just looks the other way for some reason. They won't even answer the phone calls. Hey, this guy's account's supposed to have been here a week ago, and they won't even call you back, this kind of stuff. So this idea that I'm going to have plenty of time if there ever is a tone change is just flat out wrong. I mean, there's no debate there. I mean, it's just wrong.
No question whatsoever that you're going to be, yeah.
I mean, it's like saying, don't worry, if my car breaks down, I know a mechanic who's just going to welcome me in at 8 o'clock and I'll pick it up at noon. Hey, buddy, that ship has sailed too, right? I mean, you do in a small town, but I mean, people have to be mindful. And if you're talking about some of these portfolios that I'm getting from people, or they're substantial, $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, $1,500,000, $2,000,000. I mean, this is serious money. And if everything were to go south, and I'm not saying it's going to, I don't know how you get that back. If you don't have to protect it, it's so hard. To get something back. If you got a stock that's 100, I mean, it's so hard to get something back. Hey, I don't know if you got this. I'm going to probably talk more about it with John tomorrow, but I don't know if you're he sent yesterday, John Flanagan. I don't know if you got it. This thing from Epic Times and a guy from Jeffrey Tucker.
Oh.
And it has to do with he did a deep dive into the politics behind the Weimar Republic inflation and who was for it and who was down. And it reads, if you read it carefully, it almost paraphrases exactly what you and I have been saying for the last 6 months, of how inflation favors some people and not others, and how once you get it started, there's people benefiting by it, there's people that aren't. And when you listen to Jerome Powell up there with his ridiculous comments the other day, talking about, it started because of COVID and supply chain. The guy never asked him, hey, buddy, what about the 40% bulge in the money supply or anything like that?
What about all the money?
Yeah, and never asked him that. I mean, what did Milton Friedman say? Inflation is everywhere and every time a monetary phenomenon or something like that. And this article talks about how some people, if you had a farm and you had a mortgage and were getting beaten up by the mortgage, all of a sudden people started flating the money and the price of what you're selling goes higher, all of a sudden that mortgage isn't a problem. You pay the mortgage off like instantly. So there are big winners in inflation because it's not even. And I see what's happening right now. I honestly, you don't have to give me your opinion on this, but the Fed job, according to Congress, is inflation and maintaining inflation and maintaining zero inflation or close to it. They're the ones now say 2% and full employment or as best they can. I think that has absolutely taken a back seat to protecting this wealth bubble. And I don't see how they do that without scoring.
And it has, and it's outside of what they're supposed to be doing. And I always circle back to what you just said when people ask me about the Fed bailing us out or taking extraordinary actions for things that don't relate. That you got to make an argument, but yes, this does relate to inflation or employment, which is the two things that they're supposed to be doing. Keep inflation somewhat in check and get us as close to full employment as you possibly can. That's it. That's not, that's not protecting a large bank that has made a whole bunch of stupid trades. But that's what they've turned into. And we continue. I think the Fed put is so prevalent in the markets that we just don't even talk about it anymore. Everybody just naturally expects if the stock market sells off 20% next week that the Fed's going to do things and we'll be back to where we were within 3 or 4 weeks.
And there's no reason to not think that.
Because they keep doing it. And I'm going to throw a big curveball at you now. I've forgotten the exact name of it, but the Project 2025 thing that everybody says, is the Republicans trying to take over as dictators. What it really is it's a look at reining in all of the different agency power in the federal government. And what you just, I haven't seen the Fed cited as part of this. It's more of, the lifelong bureaucrats that have a whole lot of power, even though nobody ever voted for them. And making rules just like the executive branch is making rules, but regulatory agencies making rules without them ever being approved by Congress.
Well, I'm gonna lab one
in. And I feel like, and I never really equated how the Fed behaves to that. But as you were sitting there talking it through, I'm like, you know, that's another one of the that actually falls under what a lot of conspiracy theorists say are, you know, is something that Trump believes in, which I don't even think he could. He could probably cite less of it than I can, and I couldn't even come up with the exact name. But it's just, you know, something needs to be done with respect to keeping the federal government in check, and definitely keeping the federal government in check with respect to people who were never elected and basically just showed up on time and did the bare minimum at their government job, and now they got a little bit of power, and they, you know, they push back on whoever they feel like they want to push back with that little bit of government power.
Well, you know what I'm going to ask you to do is how about shrinking the chief here? Be my analyst. Because, okay. As you know, despite my education, I did spend 20 years on the trading floor, so I have a hell of a lot of that mentality, which is you really like the rules being observed, but you're very wary of the policeman, which is kind of an odd thing. I mean, I don't know if you know that, but I have that. I have that issue. I like a lot of traders. That's why everybody would bitch about the New York Stock Exchange continually. You know, this specialist is a thief. This specialist is a crook. He doesn't follow any rule. Blah blah blah. And as soon as Elliot Spitzer started to throw people in jail for doing that, and the SEC not doing their job, and he was doing it, man, we don't like this guy because he thinks he's too powerful. Right, so
yeah.
So, and there's a mental dichotomy there, which I'm gonna admit to everybody, I sort of have. Most of the stuff that's in this Rule 25 or whatever the hell it is, I know deep in my bones that somebody has to go to these agencies and say, maybe it's the president, maybe he could do it a few times, but yet whoever it is, and I'm challenged by Trump actually getting into this kind of detail, because I don't think he cares about detail, but somebody would have to show up and say, what are you guys doing? I just read these three investigations you're doing. By the way, whose idea was this? And somebody will go, oh, mine.
Now, where did it come from?
I'd be saying, like, where the hell did it come from? This makes no sense. Well, what I'm saying, I would walk out of there, I'd be like, who's the guy in... absence of malice. I'd walk out of there with five resignations in the briefcase. Now, I know that has to happen because these guys are way out on their skis. Yet I don't necessarily trust the person who is going to go in there and do it. What are his motives? You know, who will guard the guard, sort of thing.
Oh yeah, and part of the deal is that you reclassify a bunch of federal government employees as political appointees, which makes it a whole lot easier to fire them. Well, and the big fear is that, you know, Trump will get elected and he'll basically fire everybody that was loyal to Biden. And then 4 years down the road, and we know for a fact, the one thing I can tell you for a fact is that in 2028, neither Biden nor Trump will be up for election.
And what are we going to look like?
And I'm going to tell you that for a fact. And it's like, well, no, that can't be a fact because Biden could run again if he loses, and Trump could run again if he loses. I don't see either of them being worth a damn 4 years down the road.
They better find, what was the guy looking for? Wasn't Don Quixote? Who was the guy with the Spanish guy was looking for the Fountain of Youth?
Ponce de Leon.
Yeah, he was looking for
Hernando de Soto or Ponce de Leon? Yeah, one of those. I think it was Ponce de Leon.
So here's where I am, and that I know that needs to happen. These people need to get reined in. And you know what? They all need to be, when I say fired, as an individual, I don't want to see anybody get fired, but I don't see why we need, is it 15,000 people in this consumer or something?
Exactly. I mean, exactly. The agencies have gotten bloated. And I'm going to go to the special counsel thing that just got overturned on behalf of Trump. And I'm not going to talk about it from the politics side. I'm going to talk about what was going on structural and why they were saying that special counsel should not have been named. He was never approved by Congress. He was given a $25 million budget. And that just came straight from the agency without it ever being approved by Congress.
Well, they must... But the agency has a budget.
Can you imagine how much of that kind of stuff goes on?
Okay, well, since you went down that road, back up. If the agency has a $100 million budget and we're able to put $25 million towards whatever this is, somehow or another, they either have to cut something or they weren't using it all. I mean, they can't spend $125, can they, or can they?
Well, and I honestly don't know structurally how they could do that. But I do know that the rule behind a special counsel is it needs to be appointed by the executive branch, but also the budget for them needs to be approved by Congress.
Well, neither
of those things were done. It was the head of the agency that decided I needed a special counsel. And that is the head of an agency reaching beyond their power, regardless of what your politics are.
But Russell, if it was you and me, we'd sit there and say, okay, and I pick on this one group because I started doing the show like they weren't there. This is like the brainchild of Elizabeth Warren, right? To me, it's not. I'm sure the people there are fine. They come into work every day. They do something. I don't see them tossed out and their family not eating. But the fact is, most of what they do should be in the FCC, or it should be something. We're already paying other people to do it. So I guess here's my point. Somebody needs to do this. I just don't trust Trump to be Solomon and not having his own, and the people around him having their own, pocketbook in front of who they're doing it to.
Yeah.
If we could find, Solomon or George Washington to do it, or Abraham Lincoln who didn't have a dime, or Adlai Stevenson or somebody, I'd be all for it. I don't know if I'd trust him to be the guy. You know, and his background leads me. There's nothing there that wants me to be able to trust the guy. I mean, I think he's changed. To be honest with you, I think he's gotten better because he's
I have been. You know, we see him through a filter.
Oh yeah,
I always see everybody through a filter, but we see. I was absolutely floored by this. I don't watch CNN. I watch the business networks. That's just that's because of the nature of what I do. You know, I'm on here. I teach finance at Indiana University, and I get questions about what's going on in the markets and how it relates to what's going on in class. So I've got to keep up with stuff. But I don't really watch CNN very often. And about a month ago or so, my wife had it on. I'm just kind of working on my laptop. And Trump's getting ready to speak somewhere, and the anchor at CNN goes, "So, okay, we're going to cut away now, and then when Trump is wrapped up speaking, we'll let you know what he said in a nutshell." And I looked at Mary Beth, and I was like, "Did they not show him live? CNN will not show Trump live."
Well,
I'll bet they do on Thursday night.
Yeah,
but they don't show him live because they don't want to aid him in. Or allow him to spread disinformation, and they have taken it upon themselves to be the filter between their audience and the president. I'm wondering if we're suddenly getting Trump a bit unfiltered just because of what happened Saturday, but even in the first debate, I feel like he. I don't feel like Trump 4 years ago, if he was debating somebody and they were starting to implode like Biden did, that he would be able to help himself and not pile on. And Trump could easily have looked like just, an abuse, well, somebody that was involved in elder abuse in that debate. And he did not do that. He actually seems to be, I'm not going to say, my grandfather was a scary man. And then when he hit about 70 or 75, he turned into the nicest guy in the world. And, old guys can go one of two directions. They can become super grumpy like you or super nice like me.
Well, I got...
Maybe Trump's actually figuring out he needs a little bit of niceness. Maybe somebody took him aside and said, you can't be the aggressive uncle that everybody hates at Thanksgiving all the time if you want people to vote for you.
Well, there's a couple of things you could see about that debate. One obviously, is Biden was having issues. The other is... If you just scrub Biden out of it, Trump is not that far behind. He's losing it too, just not as fast.
Oh, I know. He's only 3 years behind him now. Yeah. He flubs things as well. And I think he's going to be a lot more under the microscope with respect to misstatements, because everybody's favorite argument is, well, you know, Biden forgot this or read from the teleprompter wrong or whatever. Oh, well, here's Trump doing the exact same thing. You know, that's everybody's argument when you can't well, defend not, your own guy.
I don't have a guy.
You know, look at Trump. You know, well, but look at Trump. He can't even remember all of his grandchildren or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, well, Biden doesn't even acknowledge all of his grandchildren.
You know, you get to shrink me again here. I mean, part of my heritage is Irish. You know how Irish people are.
You guys are crazy. Go ahead.
You know, but I mean, because
you're a group that I can still that I can rip on, and I won't get fired over it.
No, it's fine. Plus, my mother was Italian, told me, just remember, leopards don't change their spots. You know,
they don't.
But now, you know, you got to ask yourself, is that the way you're going to feel like forever? I mean, I couldn't vote for Hillary for alderperson because of the fact that she took trades that weren't hers in her account. Anybody does that? I mean, anybody, if I had an out trade with somebody my first day on the trading floor, I don't know if I ever traded with them again. If I thought they were at fault or they thought they were an egg, I'd never trade with them again. You know,
that's, you know, when I would take people around the SIBO, that's exactly what they'd say. How does everybody know what they did? And so, well, if you try to back away from a single trade, you see all those guys raising their hands trying to trade right now? They ain't gonna. You may as well just go. You know,
and yet,
go find a job somewhere else.
And yet, the guy that I would never trade with again, I won't say his name. Turns out, the guy, I go to this golf outing. He's found religion. He's given all his money to this church. You know, I'm going. Maybe I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He's changed, but I'm still not going to trade him. You know, that's just the way
he's,
I am.
He's making up for past sin.
He's doing something. But now, Trump is a guy that I know. If you were weaker than him, you know, he did everything he could to not pay you in his early days. I know he didn't pay some of the people here in this building. If he had attorneys around him, which some of them are now in jail, and go ahead, fight me. I got guys on. I mean, that was the dude's personality. I guess I could hope that he's older and he's been in there once, and now he's maybe saw this, some of the mistakes he made, that he's better this time around. I can really hope for that, and maybe, you know, he'll be in there, and I better hope for that, and hope for the best, and maybe he has learned enough, and he could do a good job. I mean, the fact is, I'm not going to forget. He's still the guy that the fact when he talks about helping the middle class. Everybody was lower than him. He couldn't wait to screw. So, I mean, that would be a major turn. I hope he's made that turn, but I don't know that I believe it. You know, it's just me. I mean, and I'm not asking other people to think that or not think that. That's just me. I mean, I'm being honest about it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's trying to pull the wool over everybody's eyes or not, or if somebody that he's willing to listen to took him aside and said, you know, dude, you never come across as presidential. Well, but I do feel like you see a few instances of it lately, and not just because he got shot. I feel like he, in the first debate, he really did do a good job of constraining himself. And I rewatched the debate. Because when Biden did one of his recovery interviews, that's a good term for that. Yeah. One of his recovery interviews, he said, well, you know, the other guy kept yelling into the microphone when I was trying to answer something. I didn't see that.
I didn't either.
I didn't see. No. I never saw that. And nobody called him on it. And it was a throwaway line with Stephanopoulos. But I hung on that one. And then I rewatched the debate closely. Just, you know, after hearing what people were saying about the debate, to see if what they said about the debate was what I saw live. And I wonder, and of course, you know, the media does not treat Trump as the same way they treat Biden. I almost feel like if Trump had said that, they'd have gone back and they'd have said, well, Biden stopped talking every single time they told him his time was up.
Well, we got a dash to break here, but part of that is. Yeah. Biden's a lot nicer to the media than Trump ever was, right?
Maybe. Yeah, he really did not have a good relationship with the press. Maybe about 20 years ago or so, you know, they called him out for plagiarizing a speech, and But all of that stuff kind of faded into the past memory.
But when Trump was president,
he was not the media darling that he is right now. And I think the only reason he's the media darling is because he's not Trump.
Well, but Trump, the first
period, he's not Trump.
When he was in office, the first how many press conferences was an insult fest. I mean, what happened to Trump in regards to the legal system, I think is abhorrent. I mean, anybody who has that the federal government can run up a $60 million bill on you, what the bleep? They shouldn't be able to do any citizen, even him. I mean, I'm fully now, but he can do one of two things here, you know. And my hope in what you're saying is that he has changed and matured, and you know, there's a chance that I'm hoping he says, boy, you know, this happened to me, and it's pretty repulsive in my opinion. It probably is happening to a real lot of people. Let's fix this across the board and find out what the problem is. How this selective prosecution, how widespread is it? What's going on? Can we fix it? Or he can say, these 10 people came after me, I'm going to go after the 10 people, and it's all about him and not everybody else. Because really, it's not just him. I mean, I've had some regulatory stuff where people came at me, or people that I've gone, you know, done expert witness stuff that I think is abhorrent. And my first thing in my mind is, how many other people are they doing this to? You know, type of thing. You know, so you can look at it one of two ways, and I hope I'm going to say the old Trump maybe would have looked at it the way I wouldn't appreciate it. Now, maybe he'll look at it the other way, and that's, you know, if he gets in, I hope for that. What else can I do?
When he got elected the first time, I was very hopeful that politicians would start getting out of, or, you know, that being a professional politician would start to fall by the wayside, and we might have, you know, sharp guys like you and me that are willing to spend a few years in the House of Representatives and then pass it on to the next guy.
Well,
you know, but
well, let's talk about that after.
There is no way on earth I would run for any office in this day and age.
What are you, LBJ? If nominated, I will not run. If elected, I will not serve.
Just the amount of scrutiny and the disruptiveness relative to your life, and all the kind of stuff, true and untrue, that might be coming out of the woodwork. I just wouldn't want to subject myself to it.
I think you could run for U.S. rep in Bloomington and not have any of that crap that you get in some of the bigger cities.
You might be able to.
S&P futures down 55. NASDAQ futures down 300. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients, and you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Low and OPEC Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Andrew on the board. S&P futures down 56. The NASDAQ futures down 307. We were down a little more, but it's been in this bad range here, and a lot of it has to do with all of our top seven stocks here. Amazon, Apple's down almost $5. Tesla down $5. Microsoft down $5. Meta down $8. Nvidia down $5. Those are all getting hammered here this morning, and they haven't been doing that great the last few days. The Russell is the one that's been going up now. But before you get too giddy on that, Apple being down $5 this morning with 15 billion shares outstanding, that's $75 billion in market cap. That's how much it's piled out on the way up. The entire Russell is probably 70 billion, so it's like even. And it's, you know, those numbers are pretty scary, but they are there. We have the Dow futures are down 98. Now, yesterday was a big day in the Dow. It was up 742. S&P up 35, NASDAQ up 36. That was yesterday. A lot of that had to do with United Health, which is up 30-some dollars. Guess what? People in the health industry making money. Well, that's 200 and some points in the Dow just in one stock. I forgot the multiplier, and Russell probably knows it exactly. But I think it's like 6.7 or something, or 6.6. Over in Europe, down over here a little bit, the DAX down 85. Now, these guys were down yesterday. But it's 0.5%. The FTSE is actually up 7 now because their inflation number came out holding steady, whatever that means. CAC around down 33.5%. So not bad over there. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 177.4%. Hang Seng up 11, but still 17,739, way under 18,000, which we're going to comment on from Russell here in a second. Shanghai down 13, 29.62. Bonds, not much moving here, up 2 basis points, 4.18. The Bund unchanged, 2.44. Japan up 1 basis point, 103. Oil, which has been sneaking down a little bit from their top, it's up this morning, up 80, 64 cents, 81.40, but below to 82.5 or so it had been sitting at for a while. Brent up 42 cents, 84.15. Natural gas down a penny, 217. RBOB unchanged, 247. Gold, which has been on a tear, is up another 10 bucks today, 24.78. Silver down 25 cents, however, 31.20. Copper down 2 cents, 4.42. We have a foreign exchange, and this is where a lot of this is coming from. The dollar against the euro, is 109.4 now. It was 107.8 for a while. So that's up, you know, 1.75%. That's a big move. Again, the British pound is over 130, 130.3, which is, again, it was at 127.5 for a long time. And we've got crypto, which is down 253, but still pretty high, 64,712. When I say crypto, I mean Bitcoin. Andrew, we got forest traffic, weather, sports. No sports.
Yeah, not much to report there. Just if you missed out on that MLB All-Star game, the American League won. But other than that, that's all we got for today. It is 7:42 here in Chicago on Wednesday, July 17th. A little bit of weather here. It is currently 73 degrees. It's going to be a breezy day and kind of warm. We might have some clouds and just a little bit of showers throughout the day, but not too much. We'll have a high of 79. And over in Phoenix, they're currently at 90 degrees. They're going to have clear skies today. But there is a heat warning out there as highs will reach 112 today. And for Chicago traffic, thankfully no new accidents to report. Of course, traffic is building on the inbound expressways. Our earlier accident on the northbound Edens, it looks like the accident has cleared up, but traffic is still being delayed. So if you're heading north on the Edens, it's about Old Orchard Road. Traffic is being taken off of the Edens and onto Old Orchard. Still expect delays about 2 hours, it's saying. So that is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Russell, before we spin too far afield here, like we always want to do, you don't know it, but you're our China guy.
I am your China guy, and I, you know, I continue. All I ever hear is bad news out of China, and the stock market doesn't really go down. Of course, it's been down like the last 3 years. But I really the impending financial crisis that is you know that is looming over China. It's going to be really bad.
Now or explain what the obviously it's massive debt in their spot.
It's massive debt. It's ridiculous unemployment because ever since COVID, everybody that can is trying to change where they source their stuff. And because of that, what has happened is the manufacturers keep making stuff. They always make way too much stuff. There are, you know, the Divvy bikes that they have to fish out of Lake Michigan because people like to throw them in the lake.
Yeah.
They have landfills with thousands of these things that never even got shipped in China.
Really?
And what you hear, oh yeah, they have landfills of lots of things that they made too much of.
Well, they got cities that nobody lives in, right?
Yeah, they've got ghost cities as well. But what's one of the, and where they're getting a lot of pushback now is they've got all this stuff and they're trying to sell it at below market prices in other countries. And other countries are coming back at them and saying, we're not going to allow you to do that. We're going to put 100% tariff on this because we don't want you putting our local guys out of business that, you know, are selling something at a price that's not being subsidized by their government. And that they've gotten pushback from the EU. They continue to get pushback from us. And now they're starting to get pushback from some of the neighbor countries as well. So you've got, they've made a bunch of stuff. They really don't need, and nobody's going to buy it, so they're not going to get income from that. Everybody's, your retirement, I mean, in the U.S., a big part of your net worth is you live in the same house for 30 years, pay down the mortgage, and then, you know, that helps you in retirement. You downsize, you sell it, et cetera. The housing market over there is very different, where when you make a down payment, you start making mortgage payments and they start building it for you, and they stop building them. So you've got people that have paid a lot, paid some money toward a their home, which is just never going to get built. And they also have expected that that would be what helped them in their retirement. And that's not going to work either, because even if you've got a place right now and the price of the in the prices are depressed on the places over there, you might be selling it at a dramatic loss. So they've got some real problems there, and unfortunately their response to it is more federal government intervention. You know, they feel like they've got to their communist government, which really does control what everybody feels like or what's supposed to look like private companies over there. They're dictating what these companies should be doing in order to try to rectify everything for the overall economy, and none of it's going to work. Every major company in China has a Communist Party office
officer or something hanging there.
Yeah, you know, it's like at SIBO, we have we back before they moved to the post office, the executive floor was the seventh floor. I was there for over a year before I ever actually went on the seventh floor. If this were in China, they would up on the seventh floor, they'd have a couple of offices who were party officials, which would give you input into everything that you were thinking about doing.
You got to run it by them, eh?
Yeah, you got to totally run it by them. I love when we used to have the folks from China in to teach about options, to help them launch options on their exchanges over there, which I don't think SIBO ever made any money off of, but whatever.
No.
But I remember one of them asking me, one of those students asking me, what percentage of the Chicago Board Options Exchange was owned by the city of Chicago?
Well, they did use the name.
Yeah, well, and that was part of their argument on that one. But and it was just so weird to me that was common.
Wait a minute, you know you're trying to get me...
It was expected.
I know you're trying to get me started here.
No, I'm not. I'm really not. You asked me about China. I'm not trying to get you started on it.
Not on China.
It's just a mess, and it's... I don't see... I think the way they're going to end up coming out of the mess is some of the really gargantuan city-states like Shanghai, Dalian, places like that, are just going to start worrying about themselves. And because they're the richer, more productive parts of China.
Who are the city states?
You're going to see a handful of really big cities that just kind of autonomously do whatever the heck they want. You know, run their own thing.
Who are the city states? That was Italy, right?
Yeah. Well, no, that was I thought that was Greece.
Well, kind of both.
Wasn't like Sparta and Athens.
Yeah,
well,
yeah. They were all different.
Yeah.
Well, Venice was different from some other place. What you're talking about, I mean, I think what you're saying, but what I said, don't get me started on, is if the city builds the Bears a stadium where they make a bazillion dollars, shouldn't the city own 40% of the Bears?
I think that's awesome.
Just saying.
But you know, the current and previous mayor, do you really want either of those people having any input into draft picks?
I didn't say they had input, but I just want some money coming this way.
That's what happens.
Wait a minute.
That's what happens next.
No, can you honestly say that in the last 20 some years that either one of those people, Lori or Brendan, could done any worse drafting quarterbacks?
Probably not. I think my Beagle and our rescue Frenchie, if we had just put a whole bunch of tennis balls in the backyard and said whichever one they pick up, that's who we're picking for quarterback, we would have done better.
Oh God, wasn't that with the original thing with the random walk there? The monkey was throwing darts at the Wall Street Journal every night or something. When you talk about this, I did some research yesterday, and I don't want to go into it, but maybe I will tomorrow with John. By the way, if you're available tomorrow morning, we have both Lou and Dan are on vacation. I could use another Russell half hour. But let me. I actually went through yesterday, and you're probably the only guy who would do this. Is the inflation? I want to talk to John about the inflation in the Weimar Republic and in Turkey. And actually, in 2021, their money supply was up 76%. Now it's down to only going up 25% a year. So they're actually working it down pretty good. But Russell, take a look at their money supply. I can't even. There's so many zeros on it. I don't even know what the number is. It's like a couple of thousand trillion or something. What is that? A quadrillion? What do you do when you got so many zeros? Why don't they just lop like six zeros off? Say that's your new currency. Anyway, but the what happens? Where does Japan sit in all this? They're the ones that started. I mean, a few months ago, started screwing up the currency markets by putting money back in the system, right? Where they were devaluing the yen. They have twice as much debt per GDP than we do, and yet they've got a decreasing population. Nobody seems to want to have kids. Actually, their condom sales are down so much nobody even wants to have sex. It doesn't appear. I won't say nobody, but how if you have a decreasing population, how in the hell? And they don't have a whole lot of migrants. Not saying that's a solution.
No, they don't really allow it.
So how the hell are they going to get out of that trick bag?
I don't know that you know that question that you just asked. That's my Nobel Prize winning question. How do you properly manage an economy and a shrinking population?
When you get
that, we've never seen it done successfully, and I don't even know. You know, typically shrinking populations are a function of the plague
or war,
something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean,
or war.
I read that recently. I just thought it would kind of a timely thing to read, or war or something else. We haven't had, at least in the modern economy, I don't really think we've had instances where we've got more old people than young people. That's just not how it works. I do have a solution to that. You're not going to like it. My wife's not going to like it. I think if we reinstitute a draft, it should be people that are 40 and over that get drafted instead of the young guys.
And then invade
really
somebody?
No, I do. Well, I do because, you know, it's so technology oriented now that you're like, you know, you hardly ever see the people you're fighting against. You know, I mean, you got somebody that's controlling a drone and they fly that drone into, to somebody that's 3 miles away. But I feel like, if we're going to do a draft, you may as well take people that are toward the end of their useful life and throw them out there as opposed to, people that are just finishing high school, people that are college age, that have a whole lot more potential than we do.
I don't know if
you're really thinking about the long-term viability of your country, that you want to protect your youth.
Well, if you don't want a war in the first place, I'm trying to envision you and me in a foxhole.
Oh my God, we'd be griping so much they'd sneak up on us and we'd be gone.
Oh yeah, yeah. We'd be I can't even, but these are, and what you were mentioning, I mean, you were careful not to criticize the Chinese. I mean, but because when the stuff we're talking about, Turkey, Argentina, Germany, and the Weimar years, they're the ones that really started it, but not really. The Romans did it. Mm-hmm. I mean, inflating your way out of a problem, if you owe money, is the easiest way to do it. And
I think it's happening here.
Sure, it is.
I think it's going to happen here.
Why is it? I mean, this is how can I? I don't want to take a shot at professors and students and people, but there's no other way around it, I guess. The what happened during the '60s, '70s, early '80s, it was such a problem. Inflation here, and we're only, we're talking 10-12% a year, which is a problem. But it wasn't 40% in 3 years like this time, or it wasn't Turkey, it wasn't Argentina, where it's 75% in a year. It's going to happen in Japan probably as well, because now they're pouring money into the system. people were so on top of it because it was such a problem, Russell, that it became, I mean, Milton Friedman, instead of some little guy running around Washington telling people they were all screwed up, he became a national word. He became a Nobel Prize winner. Everybody studied monetary theory, and the idea is if you pump money in the system, guess what? Prices go up, and some people get hurt, and some people don't. I mean, this was in 1982. There wouldn't have been a first-year economics person that didn't know that, or any economics professor that didn't teach it. Now, here we are, you know, how many years later, and we don't even ask the Federal Reserve guy, like the other day in Powell's interview, we don't even ask him, hey, buddy, you pump 40% into the economy, and you let the guy lob some drivel out about COVID supply changes and how they all supply problems and how they all got caught with this inflation they had no way to anticipate. What do you mean? How do you not anticipate it?
You know why people aren't going to ask that? Because they're not going to get asked. They're not going to be able to ask.
Well, I understand that, but how do we as a nation forget all what we, to me, was fairly recent? Maybe if you're 20 years old, it's not fairly recent, but I mean, this wasn't that long ago. It's not like we're talking about the Weimar Republic or the Romans.
Right.
I mean,
right. There are tons more recent, but you know the examples you're talking about. Everybody looks around and goes, you know, that just can't happen in my house.
Yeah,
we're too modern of an economy. Blah, blah. No, you know what? The economic forces are the same whether you're, you know, I mean, maybe they're a little bit better here because our government doesn't interfere with business as much as some other governments do, although if it were up to our government, they'd probably like to do it more. But, you know, there is this constant belief in the free markets and that they're, you know, we're going to continue on over the long term with a lot of bumps in the road, the right path. If you've got government that tries to overly control every single thing, that and that's the kind of stuff that happened with the Weimar Republic. That's the kind of stuff that's happened in Turkey. It was a while ago that this happened, but I believe the president of Turkey made himself head of the bank as well.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden
I don't know if he's still in that position, but you know that's an overreach of power. Could you imagine if Trump's doing his inauguration speech and he says he's going to, and I've also decided to make myself head of the Federal Reserve.
Well, I mean, do you think this guy?
I mean, that's not going to happen, but that is the equivalent.
Well, you think this guy is independent?
Mm-mm. Of course not.
Well, is it possible? Again, I'll ask you. I hope it's not a rhetorical question. Is it possible for anybody, unless you're, you know, George Washington or Solomon or Abraham Lincoln, to actually appoint somebody to a position where they're like an inspector or something and has the right to inspect you? Is it even possible? Can a human being even do that? I mean, can you actually, other than Jimmy Carter putting a Volcker in there, because Jimmy Carter probably has a lot of faults, but he could be the most honest president we ever had. He actually did put Volcker in there and gave him independence. That's never going to happen again.
Told him to go do what he needed to do.
Because, I mean, right now, if this guy was independent, and I'm not saying, you know, that this, I want to do this tomorrow. If he was independent and he sees a government that is, for every dollar they take in, they spend, what, $1.40. So they're 40% in the hole on a daily basis.
Yeah.
If he was independent, he would. Now, there's only three ways you close that gap. One is you tax more, which wouldn't be all that popular. Second is you borrow more, which is going to drive interest rates up, right, because you're trying to get more money out of people. And the third is you print it. If he walked up tomorrow and started his press conference or whatever his next one is and say, guys, I've played this game too long. Inflation's too high. Guess what? You're on your own. I'm not printing a dime this year. If you want to spend that much, you better tax it or you better borrow it. Can you imagine the uproar? And
it'd be absolutely ridiculous.
I mean, but who would he have to be? It'd have to be Solomon or somebody.
Yeah. And that is what you just said is really what he ought to do. I feel like Christine Lagarde did a little bit of that over in Europe, where she said, you know, we can only do so much at the ECB level. We got to start doing some stuff at the fiscal level. And they imposed austerity on a few countries as well.
But that's not the same as saying, I'm not giving you a dime. I mean, she gave them negative interest rates.
Yeah.
She, you know, she's another one.
But she did push. She's the only person that's in one of those positions right now that I can recall actually saying, you guys, speak into the fiscal side, which is, you know, their version of Congress, and saying, you know, you guys have to help with this as well. And it's never popular, and you're talking about a bunch of elected officials, and they're going to have to do something that's unpopular, and they don't want to do that because the main job of an elected official is to get reelected.
Well, there's people in this whole, as long as Republican bandwagon, you know, because I'm in the middle, I guess I can criticize both sides, and I get to criticize the middle, because it's easy to be in the middle. I'm going to say that this idea that Trump is going to lower taxes, how the bleep is he going to do that?
I really don't know how he's going to, unless he's going to bring the spending in as well, and I don't know how you can, if anybody's got the
political. Or is he going to give us the same BS he gave us last time, that I'm going to lower taxes and that's going to make everybody do so well that our receipts are actually going to be higher? Give me a break. You know,
that doesn't quite work the way that we hoped it worked.
Is that
he has brought up doing away with the income tax and switching over to a consumption tax,
which, you know, that's not going to fly.
No, there are too many people whose livelihoods are are tied to the mess that is our current tax system.
Okay, well, wait a minute. We already have a consumption tax.
Oh yeah, we already have sales tax.
We already got all these taxes. It's like,
yeah,
I mean, whenever,
well, at the federal level, he wants.
Well, I mean, there's people who think that you know, we got to go here because I don't want to get too deep in this, but there's people on TV that actually sound that there's people who don't pay taxes. What are you talking about? If you make a dollar, you owe the guys 15 cents for Medicare and unemployment, right? So there's the payroll tax, which everybody pays. It's totally regressive. Everybody pays it. There's the state taxes, which everybody pays. There's a sales tax, which everybody pays. So we're talking about the income tax, which if you're a family and you make under 40 grand a year, you probably don't pay anything if you got a mortgage or something. But you're still, it's not like you're not paying, for God's sake. I mean, I mean, who's kidding who? I mean, I went through something the other day where wasn't a capital gains tax. It was something else about if you pay your 15% and you buy a car or something, and the car, the tax on the car is like $6,500. And oh, by the way, the property tax here in Illinois just ballooned. So
yeah,
I mean, I did a thing. I'll run through this real quick, Russell. And then we got a dash and. Maybe we'll talk about maybe having you on tomorrow or something to cover for somebody a little bit. But if you live in one of the south suburbs, and I happen to know this stuff because I was looking at some of the numbers, and Audrey had a house for sale out there and didn't come from her or whatever. I was looking at, there's houses that are 65 grand where the taxes are like eight or say 7,500. So, okay, if you're probably the person who can afford a $60,000 house is making, say, 40. All right, so out of the 40, right off the top, if you know, certainly if you're a carpenter and you're a 1099 person, well, 15% comes right off the top, right? So that's six. Yeah. You're going to have some sales tax. I mean, if you bought a car, if you did anything, so say your sales tax is going to be $2,000 or $1,500, and now your property tax is $7,500. Well, you're up to like $15,000 or $16,000. You got a state income tax you got to pay, right? I mean, what are you up to here, for God's sake? Well, your licensing fees for your cars and all the other stuff. What are you up to, like? You're up to like $15,000, and the people say the guy doesn't pay any tax. Bull bleep! That seems like a lot to me. what is it?
No, it seems it's a lot. Yeah, you know, it is an awful lot.
It's like 20-some percent or 30%, 48.
I can tell you because I'm shopping. I'm now house shopping in Indiana. The time has come. The property tax differential. Our property taxes for a comparable house at the same price would be about 20% of what we're paying right now.
Yeah, it's unreal. Well, yeah. No, but they must get their money from someplace.
And, you know, everybody that's worth a damn is going to leave Illinois. I know a bunch of guys that grew up down where you grew up that have moved across the border to Indiana and still work at the same place and everything else because the taxes are so much cheaper.
Audrey sold one of those guys' house, and he buys a house over on the other side. Well, they raised the toll. They raised the toll so much. It's costing him $200 a week in tolls. He's almost even.
Yeah, they're going to get you one way or another.
Without a doubt. Buddy, I'll talk to you about maybe tomorrow, because like I said, we got John's going to be doing some stuff, and we're going to have Diane Kelly call in, I think. Okay. And maybe...
We'll talk. Text me times. Free in the morning.
We'll text. We'll touch base. We'll reach out. You know,
you do that. We'll work it out.
We won't ever, like, just pick up the phone and call each other. I mean, it's so blasé. We can't do that anymore, right?
We can't do that. No. Nobody knows how to...
I'll have my person call your person.
Yeah, it's so funny. So funny talking to my daughter on the phone now that she's at college, because she just doesn't really have the full "how do you talk on the phone" experience.
God, SP Futures now 57.
It's
so awkward. And she's terrific. What if she wasn't?
I know, she's awesome. Imagine an average teenager.
Oh God, SP Futures down 311. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.